The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Christy Walters from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. Today's edition of Triangle Business Journal is for the week of April 24th through April 30th, 2026. There's also a special section on the cover page noted as Triangle Law Awards. The TBJ's inaugural awards celebrate a talented, dedicated group of leaders across a wide range of practice areas. Let's get started with our first article from this week's Triangle Business Journal, titled Midtown Tower to Rise at Exchange Raleigh. Lifetime Living plans to break ground in the coming months on a luxury fitness club and residential tower at a billion-dollar development in Raleigh. The Minnesota-based fitness giant is bringing its high-end living concept to DeWitt Carolina's The Exchange Raleigh in Midtown. Lifetime Living will feature an 18-story mixed-use building at 1110 Oculus Drive with residential units on floors 4 and above and amenities on levels 1 through 4, including a pool deck on the fourth level. The project will also include a parking deck. The City of Raleigh has issued permits for the project valued at $107 million. The building encompasses 632,672 square feet with 241 residential units, a health club, and a restaurant and bar. The Lifetime Club will span three levels and 80,000 square feet and include a 35,000 square foot beach club on the roof. We're thrilled to have our building permit, and while the timing is still to be determined, we and our partners at DeWitt Carolinas are excited to move forward with breaking ground on this game-changing development in the coming months, Lifetime said in a statement. As of December, Lifetime was still working to secure equity to break ground on the project. Lifetime debuted its $50 million Alston Town Center Club in Cary in February. That club spans two stories and includes a resort-style lap and pool, complete with a bistro bar and cabanas. Rule Joy Trammell plus Rubio submitted architectural plans for Lifetime Living at the Exchange Raleigh. The first Lifetime Living opened in 2021 in Florida. There are three other locations in Nevada, Connecticut, and Massachusetts. At Lifetime Living's Green Valley, Nevada location, one- and two-bedroom units range in price from $2,850 to $7,945 a month, according to Lifetime Living's website. Locations in Pennsylvania and Arizona are opening in 2027. Moving on to today's biz section, there are a few articles. First one, as Cook departs, Apple questions remain for RTP. As Apple CEO Tim Cook steps down in September, the massive project announced for Research Triangle Park 5 years ago has yet to break ground. There is still no timeline. State and local officials have declined to discuss the project's status, and a recent public records request shows no new permit filings or signs of progress. Despite the silence, people familiar with the project say it is not dead. But Cook is familiar with the Triangle, having worked here for IBM and earned his MBA at Duke University. Those connections gave the RTP project added weight locally. Coming in 2028, Omni gets ready to rise as hotel offerings improve. Downtown Raleigh has upped its game on hotels in recent years, and now the Omni Hotels and Resorts is coming in 2028. City and hotel officials celebrated an event April 21st. This hotel is being designed to feel distinctly Raleigh, from the first ever Peter Millar coffee shop in its hometown to North Carolina's first Bob's Steak and Chop House to spaces that bring people together and feel like a true gathering place, said Jeff Doan, Chief Commercial Officer at Omni Hotels and Resorts. North Hills adds another win with company lease. A Silicon Valley tech company is expanding to North Hills as its new CEO bets on a familiar market. Couchbase, a cloud database software company headquartered in San Jose, California, has filed permits to renovate an office suite in North Hills' main district. The location will serve as a new center of excellence for the company. The firm is led by CEO BJ Schuknowski, who has ties to the Triangle. He previously worked at LexisNexis, where he served as vice president of sales and professional services for its software division. He said his experience building the operation in Raleigh helped shape the company's decision to expand here. "A lot of our East Coast folks don't want to go to Silicon Valley," Schuknowski said. "The space has room for 100 employees." A family-owned restaurant equipment firm is expanding. The growth in the Triangle's hospitality scene has prompted a family-owned restaurant equipment supplier to build a bigger home. United Restaurant Equipment Company of Raleigh plans to build a 50,000 to 60,000 square foot building on property it owns at 5100 Departure Drive, west of Capitol Boulevard in Northeast Raleigh. The building will primarily be used as warehouse space for products, in addition to office and retail space and a training area. President Eric Margulies plans to open the warehouse portion of the building by fourth quarter 2027, followed by the office and other spaces by first quarter 2028. Besides owning the land and current warehouse on Departure Drive, he liked the location for its access to Interstates 540, 440, and US 1. Restaurants roar to life in Pender. Pender County can be overlooked, but the coastal region is growing rapidly. A coastal county often overshadowed by nearby New Hanover and Brunswick counties, is seeing a remarkable resurgence, as evidenced by a surge in restaurant openings. Pender County is rightly proud of being the home of the Moores Creek Battlefield from 1776, marking the first significant Patriot victory in the American Revolution. But not much has happened in Pender County since then. In fact, the population was just 52,415 in 2010, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Now the steady stream of people looking to land in North Carolina's beaches has Pender County surging in population. The county had 72,112 residents in 2025, a growth rate of 2.8% over 2024. That growth was the second highest in the state, trailing only Brunswick County's 4.7%. By comparison, Wake County's growth was 2.3%. All that growth is evident in the number of restaurants opening in the area. Tammy Proctor, executive director for the Greater Topsail Area Chamber of Commerce and Tourism, cited 17 restaurants that have either opened recently or are opening soon. That number includes Marina Joe's in Surf City, which will have two stories and 170 seats on the Intracoastal Waterway. High Tides and Good Vibes in Surf City features food and drinks in addition to a wide variety of games. But the new offerings include several other seafood-oriented options. Cape Fear Seafood now has 10 locations after a new opening in Surf City. Proctor said Pender's location helps with access to I-40, as well as Wilmington and Camp Lejeune. "So it's accessible," she said. "There is land to develop." Proctor said the Great Recession was a turning point as land held its value. "People realized that this was a good place to live," she said. "It's where you can develop, where you can live on the water." Moving on to the retail and restaurant section from this week's Triangle Business Journal, Kate Tracy has a number of articles, including a Glenlake adding restaurant from Virginia. A hospitality group based in Virginia is planning its third restaurant in Wake County. Big Kitchen Hospitality of Richmond plans to open the Granite Grill this winter at Highwoods Properties Glenlake Office Park off Edwards Mill Road. The 5,225-square-foot restaurant space joins a handful of other new eateries in the office park. The Granite Grill will seat 147, including 19 bar seats and a private dining space for 28, while the outdoor patio will seat 50 people. Big Kitchen Hospitality Restaurant Group has two TASA kitchens here in Cary and Raleigh. We have a tenured and talented team here and have been looking to continue our investment in the area, Big Kitchen partner John Davenport said in a release. Big Kitchen Hospitality's other restaurant, Conejo Cocina Mexicana, has one location in Richmond. Pending approvals, the Granite Grill will join other food and beverage operators at Glen Lake. Crooked Hammock Brewery and Wong's Tacos are open, while Jeff's Bagel Run has not yet opened. On the office front, Glen Lake has signed leases with Western Governors University for 48,000 square feet and Kiewit Corporation for 32,000 square feet at Glen Lake 3. Wawa plans more locations across Wake County. Wawa is again eyeing eastern Wake County as it expands across the state. The Pennsylvania-based chain of gas stations and convenience stores is planning its latest outpost at 1300 North Arundel Avenue on the north side of Zebulon. The town held a public hearing recently regarding the project, which still faces a final vote for approval. An LLC listing the address of Capital Growth Buchalter, a real estate firm based in Alabama that's developed multiple Wawas in the state, paid $3.5 million for the 1.76-acre parcel along North Arundel Avenue, Pierce's Road, and Hendricks Drive in February, according to deed records. Rob Hicks, Carolina's managing principal at Capital Growth Buchalter, said the plan is to demolish the current strip center, totaling approximately 8,500 square feet, and construct a Wawa. Capital Growth Buchalter plans many more Wawa locations across the region, including along Jones Sausage Road in Raleigh. Peter Millar is to open a cafe in Raleigh Omni. Peter Millar is getting into the caffeine business. The Raleigh Apparel Company plans to open the Peter Millar Coffee Shop at the upcoming Omni Hotel in downtown. The shop will feature coffee from Black and White Coffee Roasters, as well as a custom Peter Millar coffee blend. Jason Cater, Chief Creative Officer at Peter Millar, said in a release that the partnership with Omni has given us an exciting new avenue to express the classic aesthetic and commitment to craftsmanship that have always defined our designs. The coffee shop will open in late 2028 and will join other food and beverage spots at the hotel, such as Bob's Steak and Chop House. Apex Construction hits retail shops. The town is undergoing a Salem Street renovation, but foot traffic drops. Amid the dust, noise, and road closures, leaders and retailers want to make one thing clear. Downtown Apex is still open for business. Construction started this year on the Salem Streetscape and Saunders Gathering Space in the heart of town. North Salem Street from Saunders to Chatham Street is down to one lane, and one of the sidewalks has been removed. A future phase of construction will finish the other side of the street and adjoining sidewalk. The $4.7 million project is bringing wider, curbless sidewalks, decorative lighting, street furniture, trees, and gathering spaces for a corridor lined with shops and restaurants. I'm going to remain optimistic that all businesses will make it through, and it's going to energize our downtown even more and be an economic driver for our town, Mayor Jacques Gilbert said. The projected timeline for completion is October at the earliest. Alexis Jensen and her husband, Leif, have owned the Bowerbird Agency marketing firm in downtown for several years and represent a number of downtown businesses. The Jensens also opened the gift shop North Left 18 months ago in the same building as Bowerbird at 117 North Salem Street. Even though Alexis Jensen knew the project was coming, waiting out the construction has not been easy. Store sales are down 30 to 40%, she said. We have had significantly less foot traffic, even more than we had thought, Jensen said. The town has opened a new parking lot nearby with 152 spaces to help ease visitors into downtown. Most of the retail spaces in the construction zone are occupied. We need to be proactive in reaching out to them to see what their individual needs are and find resources and ways to help in any way possible, Gilbert said about Salem Street businesses. Let's hear a few articles from the Greater Triangle section of this week's Triangle Business Journal. Starting in Lee County, Target spends $3.3 million on land for a Sanford location. Things are picking up with the debut of a retail behemoth in Sanford. Target paid $3.3 million this month for a little more than 12 acres at the River Birch Shopping Center at 1033 Spring Lane in Sanford, according to Lee County deed records. The seller is Casto, an Ohio-based real estate developer working on a $64 million project to redevelop the blighted shopping center. The purchase marks another step forward in a long-awaited retail transformation in Sanford as national brands begin to eye the city. Local leaders say the arrival of the first Target store in Lee County could help attract additional retailers and restaurants to the area. The redevelopment of River Birch, once a popular shopping center that has decayed over the decades, is something that local leaders hope will usher in a retail renaissance for Sanford. City and county officials voted to approve millions of dollars in incentives for the project. In Chatham County, an investor buys back apartments for $5 million. An apartment complex in Siler City has sold for millions to a firm targeting affordable housing communities. Caitlin N.C. Harmony Housing, LLC, purchased the Caitlin Place Apartments complex for $5.25 million last month, according to Chatham County records. At Caitlin Place, at least 40% of the units are reserved for households earning 60% or less of the area median income under the Federal Low-Income Housing Tax Credit Program. Jim O'Connell, president of Georgia's Harmony Housing, said Caitlin Place was sold in 2023 as part of a larger sale. We repurchased it in March 2026 when the buyer expressed interest in selling in order to preserve affordable housing. Change is afoot in Person County as they dismiss an Devo director. One of the Person County leaders who helped land Microsoft's data center project at a megasite has been fired. Former Economic Development Director Brandy Lynch was released March 20th due to alleged unsatisfactory work performance, according to a copy of the dismissal letter obtained by Triangle Business Journal through a public records request. The letter is from Person County Manager Catherine Cathy. Lynch had held the role since February 2023, and she has declined to comment. Her departure comes as Person County remains in the spotlight following Microsoft's purchase of the Person County Megapark in late 2024 for what officials have said will be a data center project. In a LinkedIn post, Lynch said that situations like this have a way of testing your character and reinforcing what you stand for. For me, it confirms something I've always believed, that integrity, accountability, and doing the right thing should never be compromised, even when it's difficult. According to the five-page dismissal letter dated March 20th, Cathy said the decision followed multiple disciplinary actions tied to Lynch's alleged conduct, communication, and relationships with county staff, elected officials, and outside partners. In Wilson County, a Wilson ballpark will feature a hotel. The new baseball stadium in Wilson will be unlike any other professional ballpark in the country. Kentucky real estate group Bryant Corporation, working with NSV Development of Durham, is building a 116-room hotel that's integrated into the Wilson Warbirds Stadium downtown. The Warbirds, Wilson's new minor league team and an affiliate of the Milwaukee Brewers, play at the new $70 million stadium. The hotel will be a home to suites by Hilton, situated along the third baseline of the field. It is on track to open in the fourth quarter of this year with 30 employees. The project is part of a broader push to transform downtown Wilson. Local leaders have positioned the ballpark and surrounding development as a catalyst for economic activity, hoping the venue and unique additions like the hotel will draw tourists, boost nearby businesses, and energize the city. Leaders of the project say that currently the only baseball stadium in North America with a hotel inside its structure is the Rogers Center, home of the Toronto Blue Jays. Other ballparks in the U.S. have prominent hotels adjacent to the stadium, such as the Omni San Diego Hotel, which links to Petco Park via a walking bridge. And Durham Bulls Athletic Park has a restaurant and office buildings flanking the outfield, with a hotel just across the way. Developers say the idea of integrating a hotel was intentional from the earliest design stages. We were really focused on trying to figure out how to incorporate private development, not just near the stadium, but into the stadium, said Michael Lemansky, founder and managing partner of NSV Development. It was really more about how to help the public dollars go further. NSV Development has led the change on the stadium in partnership with the city. There will be 116 rooms at the Wilson Baseball Hotel. Switching over to travel and technology with Lauren Ornersorg, this week's Triangle Business Journal has a few articles, starting with RDU travelers seeing rising costs. The Local Impact article starts with, while a jet fuel shortage may not cancel your next flight to Europe, it could mean a higher ticket price out of Raleigh-Durham International Airport. The head of the International Energy Agency told the Associated Press recently that the globe is in the midst of the largest energy crisis we have ever faced. IEA Executive Director Fatih Birol said Europe has maybe 6 weeks or so of jet fuel left, and that flight cancellations could be coming if oil tankers can't get through the Strait of Hormuz amid the U.S.-Iran conflict. With the launch of nonstop service to Dublin, RDU now has 5 transatlantic flights. Mike Boyd, founder of aviation advisory firm Boyd Group International, said the situation would have to get much worse for airlines for that to change. But that doesn't mean flyers wouldn't feel an impact. Jet fuel typically accounts for about a third of airline operating costs, and U.S. airlines haven't historically hedged against the risk of more expensive fuel, giving them heavy exposure to volatility in price. In recent weeks, jet fuel prices have soared from below $100 per barrel to $150 to $200 per barrel. Airlines are already adding fees to account for some of the cost uptick. Delta Airlines and American Airlines are charging customers an extra $10 for their first 2 checked bags and an extra $50 for their third. Eventually, the higher cost of jet fuel will mean more expensive airfare, Boyd said. If airlines tighten their European networks, it could also impact connectivity. RDU travelers going to places like Dublin and Frankfurt, Germany, are likely connecting to cities beyond those hubs. If these carriers materially cut back on capacity and frequencies to the rest of their hub system, that could affect RDU, he said, but not by very much. Sticking with energy, in a Durham-based article, an energy firm is paying $1.1 billion for alleged fraud. Federal regulators claim a Durham-based company is behind, quote, one of the largest and most brazen fraud schemes in U.S. power market history. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has ordered American Efficient LLC and its affiliates to pay $722 million in civil penalties and to return nearly $410 million in profits, plus interest, over allegations that the company improperly collected money from electricity consumers. The penalty includes American Efficient's parent company, Durham-based Modern Energy Group. According to FERC, American Efficient stole nearly $500 million from consumers by claiming compensation for energy efficiency resources that didn't reduce electricity use in federally regulated capacity markets. It sold energy conservation credits to electricity grid operators such as PJM Interconnection and the Mid-Continent Independent System Operator. Looking at a Capital article, investors worry about California's AI attraction. Investors in the Southeast are bullish on startups coming out of states like North Carolina, even as firms advancing artificial intelligence pull more capital to the West Coast. The new Southeast VC Pulse survey from Durham-based Front Porch Ventures found that 82% of investors in the Southeast said their investment pace stayed the same or increased over the past year. Exit activity also picked up, with 64% of respondents reporting at least one exit in the past year. Still, investors flagged headwinds. Several respondents said AI has shifted more narrative gravity back towards San Francisco, raising concerns about keeping talent in the Southeast. That dynamic is already showing up on the ground, according to Triangle founders and investors. Richard Boyd, the entrepreneur behind Altism, said the region's university system makes the Triangle one of the strongest AI research ecosystems in the country. But he's personally watched venture-backed companies recruit local talent, only to relocate roles to California. Ted Zoller, a professor of strategy and entrepreneurship at UNC Chapel Hill, said the bigger risk for North Carolina isn't founders packing up for the West Coast. It's underinvesting in what makes staying attractive. On the rise, and NC Tech postings surge past trends across the nation. Tech job postings in North Carolina are outpacing the nation. New figures from the North Carolina Technology Association show IT job postings in the state rose 17% last month over the same month a year ago. The U.S. posted 5.6% more tech jobs in March year over year. While major metros led when it came to job postings, growth also came from unexpected places. While Raleigh saw about 12% fewer job postings than a year ago, Fayetteville had nearly 52% more job postings. Wilmington rose by nearly 36%. But there are still far fewer jobs in the outliers. Wilmington, for example, had about 120 job postings in March. Raleigh accounted for more than 2,000, even with the dip. Let's pick up some articles from the real estate and development section of this week's Triangle Business Journal by Kaylee Thompson. A Denver firm buys Cary Senior Living Community. A Denver-based senior living company has acquired a Cary community with plans to upgrade its food and beverage operation. Solera Senior Living paid $60.28 million for Atria Cary Senior Living on Regency Parkway near Symphony Lake, per Wake County deed records. The community, rebranded Modena Cary, was an absolute must when it came to the decision to purchase the property, according to Phil Lord, chief operating officer for Solera. The property has 138 units in a five-story building on 12.8 acres at 7000 Regency Parkway. It opened in 2022 and is assessed at $41.6 million. The acquisition marks the latest investment in the Triangle's growing retirement industry as North Carolina's population ages and retirees flock to the region. Lord said the company will turn the dining room into a restaurant-style operation where it will be open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. and will be called Bradford's Restaurant. Solera will upgrade the on-site cafe and add small plate options to the bar. Lord said the company wants to provide a hospitality experience with the presence of multiple dining venues for our residents here at the community. Solera also owns the Willows at Raleigh Senior Living Center near the Triangle Town Center. A Texas firm purchases an industrial building near RDU. A flex industrial building in Morrisville with a long-term tenant sold recently for nearly $20 million. Stone Lake Capital Partners of Austin, Texas, paid $19.5 million for the property on World Trade Boulevard, per Wake County deed records. Located on the north side of Interstate 540 from Raleigh-Durham International Airport, the building is solely occupied by store office environments. Store renewed its lease in 2024, which extended the term to early 2039, according to property records. Store has its warehouse, offices, showroom, and furniture outlet at the 134,156-square-foot building. Store employs 160 people at the World Trade Boulevard building in the Triangle. The Triangle warehouse vacancy rate in its first quarter ballooned to 11.3% as new buildings delivered with no pre-lease deals, according to Triangle Business Journal's Space publication. Demand for space in the market has been sizzling for years. In July, Stone Lake sold $920 million worth of industrial properties, according to a news release from the company. The release stated it would be investing in institutional size and quality and infill locations in markets experiencing significant population growth. And Peter Millar weighs a new headquarters in Raleigh. Apparel brand now has a warehouse space located in Durham. A leading name in luxury lifestyle apparel is looking to significantly expand its office footprint in the region with a new corporate headquarters in Raleigh, including the potential for a brand new building. Multiple sources in the real estate industry confirmed to Triangle Business Journal that Peter Millar is looking at potential locations for an office headquarters plus warehouse space. Industry sources said the company is looking for between 90,000 and 100,000 square feet of space. The sources said that Highwoods Properties was in talks with Peter Millar to build a new building in downtown Raleigh. The potential location is a less than 1 acre parking lot at 321 West Hargett Street near Nash Square. Highwoods owns the parcels and had them rezoned in 2021 to allow up to 40 stories. The zoning allows for up to 439,839 square feet of office space, up to 700 residential units, and 20,584 square feet of retail. Another possible location named by sources is Raleigh Iron Works. Grubb Ventures president Gordon Grubb told TBJ that Peter Millar has signed a lease for an undisclosed amount of office space at Raleigh Iron Works to house its G4 brand team. Grubb said Peter Millar told the real estate developer it was looking for 100,000 square feet of space. Grubb said the ironwork site does have enough land, about 8 acres, to build a new building of that size, but he said his company and Peter Millar are not in talks for any deal beyond the smaller lease. Peter Millar now occupies about 115,000 square feet of warehouse space in Durham on Twin Creeks Court, where it also houses its office operations. The company used to have its corporate headquarters in downtown Raleigh at the Pilot Mill building, but vacated the 18,000 square foot space in 2022. Shifting to on the coast, in this week's Triangle Business Journal, Dave Huffman has multiple articles, starting with a Florida buyer. A rental home community sold for $31 million in Brunswick. A Florida-based investor has poured tens of millions into acquiring a rental community in Brunswick County. Four LLCs that list Peter Von der A, managing partner at real estate investment firm MFP Capital, purchased the landing at Stone Chimney in Brunswick County for more than $31 million in March, according to deed records. The seller is D.R. Horton, the nation's largest home builder, according to deed records. The single-family rental community is off Highway 17 east of Shalott. It was built in 2024 and features approximately 100 housing units. According to Apartments.com, monthly rental rates in the community range from $1,849 to $2,950. Per MFP Capital's website, the investment firm only invests in a few high-quality opportunities that meet our acquisition criteria each year. The purchase underscores continued investor interest in Brunswick County as rapid population growth along North Carolina's coast fuels demand for housing. As more people move to the Wilmington area and surrounding coastal communities, institutional and private investors have increasingly targeted rental housing as a way to capitalize on the region's expanding population and strong housing demand. Looking ahead, UNC Health hires a leader for coastal expansion. A familiar name has returned to UNC Health as the system expands its presence in North Carolina's fast-growing coastal region. UNC has hired Ernie Bovio as regional president of the Southeast Coastal Market, a newly created role. Bovio had served as president of Novant's Coast Regional in southeastern North Carolina. Prior to Novant, he spent about a decade in various leadership roles at UNC. It made sense to come back to UNC Health as they're looking to expand their presence across the state and into the southeast portion of North Carolina, he said. His early focus will include spending time in Chapel Hill to better understand the organization's vision and meeting with physicians in coastal communities as UNC develops its plan. At the coast, UNC Health is targeting a market of 7 or 8 counties, including Brunswick, New Hanover, Pender, and Onslow. New homes show demand is strong in Southport. The coast is booming, and it's not just Wilmington. A new community is getting ready to start sales in Southport, where development has been heating up. Dreamfinders Homes will begin sales in May for the Reserve on 14th Street, a boutique community and the home builder's first development in Southport. The project features 27 home sites with 1- and 2-story floor plans ranging from 1,650 to 2,433 square feet. Pricing starts in the low 400s. Southport is at the southeastern tip of Brunswick County, one of the fastest growing counties in the country. Thousands of new homes are in the pipeline as the county faces the challenges that come with rapid development. Fuel prices whack aerial advertisers. Planes trailing banners up and down the Carolina coast have become a common sight for decades, and this spring season has been no exception. But rising fuel prices are adding new cost pressures for the aviation companies targeting tourists this season. David Dempsey of New Jersey-based High Exposure, which flies banner-towing planes along the East Coast, said soaring gas prices are impacting business. "We are hoping that things will shift," he said. For now, Dempsey is not passing along those higher fuel costs to his customers. Advertisers trying to reach beachgoers in places like Ocean Isle Beach, the Outer Banks, and Myrtle Beach. But that could change. His planes typically burn 8 to 10 gallons of fuel per hour, a cost that adds up quickly during the long summer flying days. Fuel is one of the largest variable costs for small aviation operators like banner towing companies. So far, however, higher fuel prices have not dampened demand. "We've got more contracts signed for the upcoming 5 months significantly," Dempsey said. "So over the last year, we're not seeing the economy slowing down from an advertising perspective. If anything, it's getting busier." Industry-wide, banner towing remains a premium form of outdoor advertising. Rates typically run several hundred dollars an hour, leaving operators some flexibility to absorb cost increases without revising contracts. High exposure rates vary, typically running between $575 and $725 per hour. But not everyone is able to eat the extra expenses. In the Outer Banks, Coastal Helicopters, which offers aerial tours, said it has raised prices slightly to accommodate the surge in fuel costs. Websites of other recreational aviation companies show similar shifts as fuel markets remain volatile. In this week's section of the Triangle Business Journal titled Shades of Success, The Impact of AI, there's a large article titled Utilities Face Knowledge Crisis. This article is by Connie Gentry. America's aging workforce is putting scores of businesses that are dependent on institutional knowledge in a precarious position. Workers age 55 and older account for roughly a quarter of the U.S. workforce, per the Census Bureau. and many of the most essential industries rely on unwritten processes that, while fully understood by the existing team, remain undocumented for training purposes. One of the most vulnerable is the utilities sector, where 80% of utility firms reported that at least 25% of their workforce was over age 55 as of 2022. In the next 5 years, nearly 30% of utility operators are eligible for retirement, and that's going to cause a huge institutional knowledge loss across the utility sector, said John Armon, founder and CEO of Utilist, an AI native on-premises intelligence platform for utilities. Armon has found that utilities typically don't have a succession plan in place to capture the knowledge and historical perspective of their retiring staff. Hiring is very hard for the utilities, and they often spend thousands of hours to train utility operators, he said. It's time-consuming, the traditional methodologies are not working well, and most new operators aren't going to sit down and read a thick operational manual. Having spent 16 years in computer science and data-driven modeling to address environmental engineering, infrastructure challenges, and public health-related concerns, he now sees AI as the answer for helping with the transfer of knowledge from retirees to the next generation of utility operators. Additionally, AI can solve another problem prevalent in this industry: the fact that utilities are often running on very old systems, old technology that pose security risks. If we cloud them, it opens us to cybersecurity challenges. So statistically, like 70% of those utilities are going to stay off the cloud because of cybersecurity, Armon said. The result is that there's limited visibility across the operations, and in his experience, utilities can only see 20% of their infrastructure, and the rest lives in the memories of a workforce on the cusp of retirement. The Utilist solution, WorldGraph, is a spatial intelligence platform that runs entirely on-premises, utilizing edge devices that operate inside the utility's firewall and identify operational knowledge about the critical infrastructure. It captures operational knowledge through our small language model that is like a memory. It keeps learning from the actions, from the procedures, from the documents that we have, he explained. While most large language models like ChatGPT or Claude run on the cloud, small language models can run on almost any device, a cell phone or laptop, for example. Our small language model will run on your edge devices on premises in those areas that are critical infrastructure, so they are air-gapped from the outside, he continued, adding that the edge solutions like NVIDIA's Jetson and the Apple Mini offer easy, low-cost entry points. Air gap in cybersecurity refers to measures that safely secure content across intranets from unauthorized access from the internet. Typically, time to onboard at a utility is 1 to 3 months, and within 6 months to a year, it becomes a digital support. We integrate virtual reality into the platform, so now the operational knowledge platform could support training and utility operators, see what they need to do in a situation, because this model has the memory, Armon said. The whole platform actually has agentic AI as part of that memory, and that keeps interacting with different data sources and keeps learning. In Utilis' first 90 days of launching early last year, two major metropolitan water utilities bought into pilot studies with the company. It's a layered solution, starting with the data integration that most utilities need as a foundation. After data is integrated into the platform, a module is built to address the specific area of concern that the utility has prioritized. We bring efficiency to that specific utility. For example, one of our East Coast utility partners focuses on pump station optimization, and for a Midwest partner, we focus on sensor data quality, Armon said. The utilities are paid pilots with more than $100,000 generated initially, followed by an annual license agreement. In his Final Four pitch during Tweener Madness last month, Armon said he expects to raise $1 million to $1.5 million in the coming year. Additionally, he predicted most utility operators will reduce their manual workload by 50% utilizing the platform. Tweener Madness is a competition where 8 startups are selected to vie for a $25,000 investment. And although Utilist did not advance to the championship round, it remains one of the 21 semifinalists chosen from a pool of 184 applicants for $50,000 NC Idea grants that will be awarded next month. Utilist was also selected as one of 13 tech startups in the launch program that is part of the KPMG Accelerator in Chapel Hill. Armin participated in that demo day showcase on April 14th, and his expectation is that participating in KPMG's launch will support the company's expansion from water utilities to electricity, oil, and gas. Our understanding is that electricity utilities are doing much better in terms of intelligence and having more updated infrastructure, but it's a new frontier for us, he said. We've also been active internationally, and we're presenting our solution in Doha, Qatar, earlier this year, mostly for the oil and gas market in that region. Even before the war started, contracting with utilities has been a time-consuming process, but he anticipates that geopolitical uncertainty will only elevate the need for oversight of critical infrastructure. The company has been self-funded thus far, but is looking to raise money through angel investors or a pre-seed funding. We are very sustainable in terms of growth, and due to the projects that we have, we could sustainably grow and deploy our solutions to the market, said Armin, adding that they are actively meeting with utilities and presenting at conferences that gives exposures to new customers. He's presenting at conferences in Florida, Georgia, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, as well as leading a session on agentic AI at the Edge during the upcoming American Water Works Association annual conference and expo in Washington, D.C. In the water industry, they expect to add 5 new utility clients by 2027, and expansion into the electricity, oil, and gas sectors will unfold in the coming 2 to 3 years. Looks like we have time to read the executive voice section of this week's Triangle Business Journal. Today, the Q&A is with Jennifer Walsh. William Peace University found its next president more than an ocean away. Jennifer Walsh is coming to downtown Raleigh from Hawaii, where she serves as vice president for strategic initiatives and chief strategy officer at Hawaii Pacific University. Previously, she spent more than a decade at Azusa Pacific University in Southern California as dean of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. During her time at the private institution in Hawaii, Walsh helped launch new degree programs that fueled growth in undergraduate and graduate enrollment. Now she aims to do the same here when she begins as president on June 1. Walsh arrives at a time when small private colleges are navigating enrollment and financial pressures, partly driven by changing demographics. She sees opportunities at William Peace, founded in 1857, to strengthen its role as a talent pipeline for the Triangle through targeted programs and partnerships while preserving its core identity. What led you to higher education? I'm a political scientist by PhD training, and for a brief moment in time, I thought about doing some sort of public service in the political realm. But my love is really with students. I didn't discover that until I was about halfway through my PhD program and had the opportunity to teach at a local community college. So many of them were juggling part-time jobs, some had children, some were taking care of parents and spouses, and yet they were invested in their own education. That was life-altering for me. What prepared you for this role? For the last 2 years, I have been serving in a new chief strategy officer role, which is something that higher ed institutions have begun to do more in earnest as the landscape continues to change. You almost need a dedicated role in order to keep up with all of the changes. I spearheaded one of the first programs in the Western U.S. to launch a 90-credit bachelor's degree, a 3-year bachelor's degree, which is becoming increasingly popular. It's something I would love to start a conversation about at Peace. It's really focused on affordability and accessibility for career-minded students who know exactly what they want to do and are motivated to complete an accelerated pathway. In Hawaii, that was something we found to be essential. What led you to William Peace? I've had a lot of fun developing that role in Hawaii, but knew that my next step would be a presidency. I was really looking for institutions that were student-focused. I have to be in an institution that embraces students as the reason for their existence. And then, secondly, in an institution that is innovative and nimble and flexible, because I'm a builder. What does it mean to be a builder in higher education? My MO has been to launch programs at zero or very low investment costs, see them become revenue positive within the first year, and see them grow and add positive contributions that allow the rest of the university the resources it needs to grow and thrive. It doesn't happen overnight, but with steady progress, it also doesn't take generations either. How do you see Peace positioning itself? What I love about Peace, though, is that it takes that traditional legacy that has allowed it to thrive for so many generations, and recently it's pivoted to really focus on career preparation. One of the things that I've been talking in earnest about is launching bespoke, customized graduate programs. Not every generic program that has been replicated six times over, but really looking to see how can we create innovative, specific graduate programs that meet a particular need. What are your immediate priorities? Take as many meetings as I can. I need to download as much information as I can about the Peace story. Also looks like we have time to read today's viewpoint from the this week's Triangle Business Journal. This one's on labor policy, and it's written by John Hood, who is a John Locke Foundation board member here in Raleigh. His email is listed as well, and he can be reached at jhood@johnlocke, that's Locke with an E at the end of it, .org. The title of his opinion is Pay for Jobs Taken, Not Job Searches. All 50 states offer unemployment insurance benefits to workers who lose their jobs through no fault of their own. Because states fund these benefits with payroll taxes, however, and must replenish exhausted UI trust funds with interest-bearing loans from the federal government, UI benefits vary according to how state legislatures weigh the resulting trade-offs. In Washington, Massachusetts, Minnesota, and New Jersey, for example, jobless claimants can receive more than $900 per week in UI benefits. In Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana, the maximum weekly benefit is less than $300. Another key variation is how long workers can stay on unemployment. In Massachusetts, it's 30 weeks. California, New York, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Texas, and many other states set the maximum duration at 26 weeks. On the other end of the spectrum is our own state, which caps UI duration at 12 weeks under normal circumstances and up to 20 weeks during periods of high unemployment. What are the relevant trade-offs? One is between the generosity of benefits and the willingness to take a new job. Few dispute that access to unemployment insurance makes it less likely a laid-off worker will become immediately reemployed. One of the purposes of the system, in fact, is to give displaced employees time to find a new position that isn't radically different from their previous one in salary, required skills, and prospects for advancement. But how long a job search should the system finance, and how radical a change should workers be willing to accept? Another set of trade-offs reflects the fact that UI benefits are financed with payroll taxes that vary according to the employment history of sectors and firms. Setting payroll taxes too high will discourage job creation and pay raises. When the North Carolina General Assembly enacted sweeping UI reforms in 2013, the immediate concern was a depleted trust fund. During the Great Recession, our state was one of the many that ran through its accumulated funds and had to borrow. Legislative leaders and former Governor Pat McCrory were determined not just to slash the debt, but to restore the trust fund to a level sufficient to avoid a similar situation in the future. The plan worked. As of 2025, North Carolina had more than $5 billion in its UI trust fund, well above those of peer states such as Texas, Florida, and Georgia. Still, our cap on benefit duration remains controversial. I think a fair reading of the evidence is that longer durations create too much of a reemployment disincentive. I recognize that empirical evidence about UI's effects on unemployment is mixed, however. There is a promising alternative, one that may draw support from both sides of the debate. In 2020, Idaho created a bonus up to $1,500 to UI recipients after they accept new positions. A newly published study by Duncan Hobbs and Michael Strain of the American Enterprise Institute found that after the bonus was instituted, Idaho's employment to population ratio rose 3.6 percentage points. North Carolina ought to consider replicating Idaho's approach. By changing when benefits are paid, it reduces work disincentives without inviting accusations of stinginess. As mentioned at the beginning of this broadcast, this edition of the Triangle Business Journal includes a special section related to the Triangle Law Awards. There's a brief article about the awards from the editor-in-chief, and then they've listed out many of the honorees. We have just a few minutes left, so I thought I'd list out those nominees. Under litigation and dispute, Nana Asante-Smith with Parker Poe Adams & Bernstein. Under real estate, Jason Barone, Morningstar Law Group. In life sciences and biotechnology, Bernard Brown II with Michael Best and Friedrich. For estate planning, Stephen Bird with Manning Fulton and Skinner. Under banking and finance, Todd Evison with Wyrick Robbins Yates and Ponton. For criminal law, Shannon Fulton with Brooks Pierce. Corporate and securities law, Jeffrey Hart with Robinson Bradshaw. For family law, Kathy Hunt with Gaylor Hunt, Davis, Taylor, and Gibbs. For corporate counsel, Dave Kleiman with SunState Security. Corporate and securities law, Deanna Labriola, Fox Rothschild. Under labor and employment law, Emily Massey with Warden Smith. Mike Mitchell with Smith Anderson, as well as Bart Norman for banking and finance litigation and dispute. That's just a few of the nominees presented. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Again, I'm Christy Walters, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.